If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 170, which we're going to call the buffet today because we're going to talk a little bit about lots of stuff. What has been interesting is we're going to kind of continue our TV theme a little bit because it seems like there's been a lot of developments in the entertainment industry. probably the biggest thing is the record low
Oscars.
Yes. Yeah. People don't care anymore.
No.
They don't have to vote on it, so they don't care.
Well, I know that, but I think people are genuinely sick and tired of entertainers trying to be politicians.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Just shut up and sing.
Yep. I pay you to sing and dance.
Juggle, clown, yep. Juggle.
I don't want to hear anything else out of your mouth. But that being aside, there's a few things that are going on. Let's start off with the Star Trek stuff going on first. So, let's talk about Section 31 a little bit. So right now, I guess Section 31 is still, it's still on the docket to be produced, but according to, Alex Kurtzman, it is kind of in limbo. they don't know what they're going to do.
So what's new about that?
Yeah. The thing is it's kind of like Firefly. I think it's you know, hey, we're bringing Firefly back. If that's what it is.
No, that's an April Fool's joke. Don't tease me with that. There's been rumors of that around again lately, where they're talking about rebooting it. I'm just like, no, just.
But Josh Whedon is absolutely
do
said
it.
There's
yeah.
not going to happen. But this is kind of where Section 31 is. Because, I mean, I think the Paramount's contract with Michelle Yeoh is coming close to an end. I don't think it, you know, that unless they have options that they can exercise.
To be honest, really, is she even required for a Section 31 show?
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is how do you have the Section 31 show with what happened in the last season of Discovery and her going back to the Mirror Universe the Terran Emperor?
Assuming that's where she went.
Correct. I mean, that's the assumption. So you have Alex Kurtzman who's saying it's yes, we're still doing plans for it, but I can't give any specifics. Then you have Akiva Goldsman, who is a huge Trek fan. He's the one who I think Kurtzman is a Trek fan because he gets to determine the direction, and he's written a lot of stories. But I think Goldsman, as the who is the actual Section 31 series producer, who is a well-known Trek fan. I mean, he attended, you know, through the 70s and 80s, and you know, when he was younger, he attended fan conventions as a fan, and that's why he got into, you know, this part of the entertainment industry and the Star Trek franchise, and he is. Quoted is there's a lot of uncertainty about the Section 31 show. And, at this point, I don't have any expectations for that show. If it doesn't happen, I'm not disappointed, you know.
It's kind of like WandaVision.
Yeah.
I'll watch it.
Exactly. But is it I'm demanding?
Yeah.
As a fan? No. And I just, it's interesting. some of the other things that are interesting, well, I guess both Star Trek Strange New Worlds and Star Trek Discovery have both had issues with COVID exposure. Now, Strange New Worlds, it didn't stop production because it was like somebody who's not part of the cast or the main filming crew was exposed. And so they're under quarantine. And this was a couple weeks ago when this happened, so they're probably back doing whatever they're doing. But I guess Discovery was shut down. Production for Discovery Season 4 was shut down because some main members of the crew were exposed to someone who was diagnosed with COVID-19. Now, that being said, you know, they've got the money to do the one-day rapid turnaround test to find out if people have it or not, so they could probably... But there hasn't been any updates saying that that production has... has
resumed.
Resumed. And then it was confirmed by Anson Mount, that who plays Captain Pike, that Strange New Worlds is going the way I want it to go, which is it's going to be episodic, so each episode can stand on its own like original TOS. But part of that, he said, is because they want to go back and they want to address stories that exist within the 1 hour time frame. I mean, even TOS had an overarching thing, and CBS kind of screwed up that original TOS, which also made it seem more episodic than it was, because they didn't air the episodes
in order.
But that being said, I'm glad to go back to where, you know, you can name an episode and the episode is its story stands on its own. Now, what will be interesting is if they continue to do the what became the TNG episode format, which was, you know, you had you had two or three storylines going on. You had the main storyline that, you know, concentrated on the three main characters, which in this case would be Pike number one and Spock probably. And then if there will be, and you know, and then there were other people involved in that. And then, you know, some of the sub characters will have a shorter storyline, you know, for resolving some other issue or problem. That's yet to be determined, I guess, or yet to be seen, because we don't know how episodic the episodes are. You know, or is it going to be like Discovery, where in season one, where Lorca and Harry Mudd, you know, had that great episode with the time travel and then zooming back, you know, all the time. I mean, that was an episodic episode. If you took that out of Discovery season one, it really doesn't affect the overall timeline of
the rest of the story.
The rest of the story that went on. So, what was other and was interesting is, you know, Strange New Worlds, it was a series that was demanded by fans. And Anson Mount, in an interview, said, "Honestly, I've never felt such embrace from a fan base or on anything I've done." And so that's cool, because that's, you know, that brings us back to the days when we were helping run security and things for Star Trek conventions, and you know, and seeing the fan outpouring for the original TOS folks. And
I'd love to see this renaissance bring that back.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I can say right now, because of our weird COVID times, is that, you know, they're trying to plan in-person cons in 2022, but all this stuff for 2021 is via Zoom, you know?
Which is still... I don't know. That to me is, if you're going to pay that much money, even though it's less than...
Yeah.
Than the traditional in-person conventions are, I'm still like, that's too much to spend for not sharing the same oxygen.
I totally agree. You know, and some of them, they're trying to do it to where they're having forums where, you know, you'll have panels and then people can ask questions to the panel via, you know, Zoom or WebEx or Skype or however they're doing their... And I just... That's going to be... I don't know. I just don't find any joy in it, you know? It reminds me too much of work, I think.
Well, that, and I think, honestly, guys like you and me, we got more bang out of the doing it.
Yeah. Well, there's the cosplay aspect of it. There was the, you know, there is a thrill getting to see them in person, even if you can't be near them.
Yeah.
You know, as much, you know, part of the whole going to conventions thing, too, was also getting autographed pictures. You know, and I'm not like when people go to Comic-Con today, you know, I don't think people realize that it's, you know, today if you go to, like, a Comic-Con, like Lexington Comic-Con or Cincinnati or Columbus or Indianapolis, any of these, they're paying, like, $50 to get an autograph. We used to pay like $3 to $5 for the picture, and the autograph was free because we bought the picture. Because that $50 today doesn't include the item. The item to have signed. You know, and I think that takes
although near the end, it was getting kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was. Well... And we did, you know, near the end, too, because we were working the cons, we were getting our autographs for free, regardless. You know, that was, a lot of that was the payment, you know, access to actually meet the star, and then to get an autographed item, or like we did Marina Sirtis in Lexington, and ended up helping Creation run the entire con, because they had one lady there. I think I have 10 or 20 things signed by Marina Sirtis, including my stand-up, you know, cardboard stand-up, which I still have. So, the other thing, speaking of Strange New Worlds, is so they've a little bit more has come out about some of the things to help keep the continuity between the end of Discovery Season 2 and then original TOS, is that the uniforms are going to change again, and the sets on the Enterprise will change. Like, I'm not sure if it's so much that they're getting a refit, but it's supposed to be more retro, you know, to kind of blend it into what's going to happen with TOS, or, you know, with the way TOS is. So that'll be interesting to see.
I've always thought that they shouldn't even bother building us a new set. They just need to go to Ticonderoga, New York, and use the sets that were based on the original.
I think those sets got moved to Florida.
No, that's a second.
Oh, was that?
That is a second set. Shatner just did his birthday up at the one in New York. Yeah.
Interesting. So that's really the Star Trek news. The other thing, and I want to recommend it since I've watched it, it's the number one show on Netflix right now, is Shadows and Bones.
What's that about?
So it's based on a series of books, and I couldn't tell you the author if I... although I now plan on going back to read about it. But basically, there's a war going on, and it's because this, like, supernatural wall... where supernatural creatures live inside this, like, fog. It's like a black fog, and they call it the Fold. And it cuts across the country. And there are people who have superpowers called the Grisha, who this country, it's weird, because it's like it's the country and the names are all old Russia. Russian names and German names. But they, they're fighting a war with not only another country, because that country wants to kill all the Grisha, but then they're also fighting the Fold and the fact that they have to move armies across it, you know, and it's pretty interesting what's going on in the show. I don't want to spoil it, but it, you know, it's only 8 episodes. It's all on Netflix right now, so you can binge watch it. You come to like the characters very quickly, and you know, it is the quintessential light versus dark scenario. But it's like it's steampunky, you know, because it's like turn of the century, you know, like right before the Russian Revolution type technology, and like machine guns have just gotten invented, and it's taken part of the advantage of the Grisha away, because now we have a weapon who can, you know, sling hundreds of bullets at a time, you know, within seconds or within minutes. And but it's very compelling story. I mean, you know, I watched an episode and then it was like, I gotta watch another episode. Oh wait, this one's good. I gotta watch the next one. And you know, it truly is 8 hours of story. Each episode is an hour long, and it's, you know, on Netflix, so there's no commercials to aggravate you in there. I had become, if it weren't for the show, I probably would not have watched Netflix for another month or two. I mean, it's the streaming service. Yes, it's the oldest streaming service, but it's also the one that I think has gotten longest in the tooth. Although, and you know, again, statistics can be made to represent what somebody desires. But supposedly 51% of all people streaming think Netflix is the best streaming service. And I sit there and I scratch my head, because while they have good shows, for every good show they have 20 really, 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 not even B-movie type shows. These are like public access television dramas. You know?
And every time they get a good show, then they cancel it.
After, yeah, it's either too cerebral or, you know, the problem Netflix has is they've gotten into data analytics so much that they can't get out of their own way. They cancel shows that are good and draw a really good fan base, but because the analytics say that people won't watch it, and
or they're chasing a demographic that
they're never going to get.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of funny. So you have something really good like Shadow and Bones on a series, and then the new, and I mean, it's got Anna Kendrick, Daniel Day-Kim, and Toni Collette is Stowaway as a science fiction movie. And what happens is somehow one of their technicians, they're going to Mars, one of their technicians gets caught in between like an engineering panel and sealed up in it, and then they have a carbon dioxide scrubber problem, so they now have 4 people on what was supposed to be a 3-man crew, and yet they have only enough oxygen for 2 people to get to Mars. And instead of it being like, it could have been like a murder mystery where this stowaway is going to kill somebody or kill all of them, or the crew goes nuts because they have to determine who the 2 that are going to live are, you know. And no, it ends up being the super anticlimactic story that you just kind of scratch your head at the end and you go, and I wasted an hour and a half, 2 hours watching this. And
which one is this?
It's called Stowaway.
Stowaway. And we're still talking Netflix.
Netflix.
The one I'm looking forward to, and I don't even really know why I'm looking forward to it, because I know it's going to be awful, is on Amazon Prime, the Tom Clancy's Without Remorse series. I'm a sucker for Tom Clancy. Always have been. Always will be.
Well, and the Jack Ryan series on Amazon has been excellent.
It has been.
John Krasinski.
It has been really good. Although I question how really Jack Ryan-ish it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's definitely not the Hunt for Red October Jack Ryan, who was, you know, an analyst who gets thrown into.
This is Jack Ryan action star.
Yeah.
Surprise, which has always been kind of funny to me.
Yeah, yeah. But, I don't know, it's enjoyable. And probably, you know, Amazon's got some good things that they've done. I would say that because there's so much competition in the streaming services right now, they've all upped their game. I mean, Apple TV Plus has been great. I still have yet to watch For All Mankind's second season. But we watched some other stuff on there recently, and it was excellent. Paramount Plus has upped their game. You know, the Star Trek shows have high production values, although I still think they wasted one of the greatest storylines they could have kept, which was, you know, the whole, you know, why is a whiny little Kelpian destroying all the, you know, causing the burn and destroying all the dilithium in the galaxy? They need me to come help proof their writing. Because...
So they needed somebody.
Because, you know, that was one I still have a gripe about, because, well, one... You're not even 3 or 4 episodes into the season, and they've resolved that, oh, this is what happened and why the burn happened. And it's like, that's something I would have kept over multiple seasons, and then let the Osira, or Osira, however you want to say her name, let that be the seasonal plot line, you know?
Which is what I think they were trying to do.
I know.
But having built up the burn as big as they did, and then to waste it like that was just criminal.
Yeah, I agree. And then I guess the whole time travel thing has been confirmed for Star Trek's Picard Season 2. Some recent pictures came out where they're showing Seven of Nine and Wrath on a city bus in Los Angeles. And so we may have some double dumbassery going on there, if you catch the reference.
Nice.
But so that's kind of been confirmed for Picard Season 2. I'm actually looking for, so there's a John Wick TV series gonna come out called The Continental. And it's supposed to be a prequel.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a prequel, right?
Yeah. And plus, we also have the 4th and 5th installments of the John Wick movies coming out, too, where the Continental will also be. But it's supposed to be about a young Winston, the prequel is. And it's going to be a star show. And, of course, the series will not have Keanu Reeves in it, but that's okay. And then, last but not least, let's go back to the MCU. I've been making a lot of fun of WandaVision, and I will continue to make a lot of fun of WandaVision. But I'm also going to make a lot of fun of Captain America and the Winter Soldier series.
Really? Did you not like it?
I like Sam taking over Captain America, and, you know, and being able to fly and all that. I think that's cool, and I like the reformation of Bucky Barnes' part, but like,
you didn't care for John Walker.
I didn't care for John. I never liked the U.S. Agent comic books anyway. But I don't like Cheryl Carter.
Yeah. What happened with Carter's arc, it was, is bizarre.
Yeah.
And, you know, even at the end of it, of this season, when she has a chance to be redeemed, she's clearly not taking it.
Yeah. Well, and not only that.
Which is bizarre for the Carter lineage.
And I also think, you know, it's kind of like a Star Trek Discovery Season 1 final episode. They had to tie everything up with a bow, and so she... We know... Before the scene in... where she kills Carly, we, you know, they did a great job making it seem like, well, she's probably still good. You know, she's just a little rough from being on the run. And then you find out she's the...
she's the power broker.
Yeah, she's the power broker. And then they partner. It's like when they, well, we're going to give you your rank back, Burnham, even though you started a war with the Klingons. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like that's unprecedented, but yeah, I do find that a little jarring.
Yeah, so
but at least Burnham wanted it.
Yeah, exactly.
Carter apparently doesn't.
Well, she's more powerful as the
power worker.
So let's move from entertainment to some of the things going on in tech. So one of the things, and I've been saying this for a while, it's just now the statistics back me up, which is AMD is dominating Intel in the CPU space. Even though Intel has lowered the prices on their new processors that they've come out, and many are cheaper than the AMD processors, AMD is by far outselling Intel.
Now, as a sales metric, I understand that. From a performance metric,
AMD crushes Intel from a performance metric,
which is why the sales metrics are the way they are.
Absolutely, they're directly correlated. I mean, it's kind of funny. So an Athlon 3000G, which has is how should I say this? It is the entry level to the Ryzen family. It's not a Ryzen chip, but it's the entry level. So I do a lot of crypto mining, and I use besides running a lot of the standard CPU benchmarks, I use the crypto mining software a lot of times because your hash rate is directly in certain cryptocurrencies like Monero is directly related to how powerful your CPU is and how many threads it can run and everything. A Athlon 3000G, which is a low-level, it has Vega graphics in it, which makes it a suitable low-end gaming system, is as fast as a ninth generation, so two generations ago, Core i5, which a lot of people are running, because you don't, you know, just because the 10th and 11th generation comes out, a lot of people do not upgrade their processor and their CPU. And by far, because it has Vega graphics, it blows the pants off of the Intel integrated graphics that happen in, you know, a lot of their chips. Now, Intel's supposedly up their game with the Iris and Iris Pro integrated graphics, but again, those are only available in their latest and greatest chips, and the Ryzen chips that have integrated graphics have even better integrated graphics than the Vegas that they had, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, or, you know. So, it's not a surprise to me, but I like to see the validation. And it's also the same thing, you know, Apple's M1 chip is a performance beast. Intel tried to downplay it and all this stuff, and they got Justin Long to come and do their advertising campaign, but that's exactly that. It's an advertising campaign, and the real tech world, people are like, Intel, you're just off your rocker. But I think some of the things that are happening, you know, when you're the big dog and you're the big dog for so long, everybody's gunning for you. And a lot of times, the big dog, particularly if they've had a long run like Intel has, they will eventually, some new technology comes out and they're not on it because, again, we're the big dog. We've done it this way. We're going to continue to go down this path. And so they have not been embracing a lot of the new processor technologies, and so now, at this juncture, they're really suffering. Do I think the x86 architecture is dead? No. But we've seen it, I mean, AMD's not just blowing the Intel out of the water on, like, desktop and laptop systems. They're blowing Intel out of the water on server systems, you know, where there's actually money in compute. You know, their EPYC processor has consistently outperformed the flagship Xeon processors produced by Intel for a long while now, and they're less costly. You know, and that's also hurting Intel's bottom line. But the other problem is AMD makes two things. They make GPUs, really good GPUs, and they make really good processors. Intel, over the years, has bought networking companies and fiber channel companies, and, you know, they diversified them so much that their eye is no longer on the ball of being super competitive or the most competitive in the CPU arena.
Well, part of that, I think, comes from the philosophy of when Intel was born out of, and that was you diversify rather than specialize.
Yeah.
And now the way you diversify is you create another whole company.
Correct. That specializes.
Specializes in something else.
Yeah. That's very true. That's very true. So the other thing, of course, Apple had their event last Tuesday. I was going to do a podcast solely dedicated to that, but I didn't think the event was anticlimactic, but I kind of knew what was going to happen beforehand. And,
yeah, I was going to say, even I'm like, there was no real news to come out of it.
Yeah, the big thing to me was the AirTags were actually coming. And most people will not, if you don't use Tile today, you will not appreciate the AirTag. So Tile's company, they make these, they even have stickers, they have some neat products, but it allows you to track items. And you have to use, and if you use Tile, you use the Tile app. Which, again, if you're looking at Matt's face, it's like, Tile? He's scratching his head. Yeah, a lot of people, I know a couple people who use Tile products. I've never invested because typically they're limited range. And for you to get long range with Tile means you needed to be in an area where lots of people were using it, because it works similar to Apple's Find My with the MacBook or e-bikes, because Apple's allowed some e-bike companies, they're opening that API up so that electronic devices that can be tracked, you know, it's like if you left your laptop somewhere or somebody stole it, you could track it. Because what happens with like a MacBook is if it comes in product, Apple's created a network of all the Apple devices that are out there. And if it comes within proximity of that another Apple device, it will beacon. Now, your beacons are totally private, and my assumption is Tiles is that way, although I can't guarantee it, because Apple actually documents how they've built this network and how they want to keep your privacy private. You know, like, if you... you know, so other people can't see, like, your MacBook is out here. Oh, I'm going to, there's a rogue MacBook. Let me go find it. Unless you can log into your account, nobody can see it, because they use security keys. They're not using your account identification. It's pretty sophisticated. Apple AirTags use this same network. So I put an AirTag on my keychain, and I drop my keys at, say, Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, and I can't find them when I'm sitting in my seat, I can, you know, go into Find My on my iPhone and go, oh, my keys are by my car in the parking garage, you know. And I can make it play an alert so I can find it. One of the other neat things that it does on an iPhone 11 or better is it will actually give you turn-by-turn directions, like an arrow on your phone, and it'll point and take you directly to an item. And that's pretty important. Now, Tile CEO has thrown a big fit and complained to Congress that Apple has created a monopoly in this. But again, Apple has an API. Tile can join that, use that API and use that service. Although it would negate a lot of their value if they're using somebody else's service to do, the thing, to use their devices. It's pretty funny, but I think because Apple's done it and it's within Apple's network, you're going to see a lot more use of it. One of the other things that's interesting too is, so if there's an AirTag that belongs to somebody else, but it seems to be following you for a period of time, you'll get an alert saying that a rogue AirTag. So if somebody tried to use one to track you, you'd be able to find it, which is also interesting too.
I can't imagine Tile doing that.
I don't know. I can't imagine them doing that either. But we have some friends, and they have a husky, and he likes to break out of his fenced-in backyard, and they have a Tile on his collar. And that's how they find him in the neighborhood. But
that's smart.
He has to be within, a couple hundred feet of them, because they're the only ones who are using Tile, and so it's going to use Bluetooth to find that tag. Whereas anybody in that neighborhood, if it were an AirTag and anybody in that neighborhood had an iPhone, and say he could be a mile down the road, they would be able to find him and pinpoint him. I mean, that's kind of the difference in the technology, partly just because of proliferation.
My understanding of the Tile technology was that they, or at least initially, were going to use like GPS.
Correct. So, when they first started, yeah, they were going to do GPS. That became too big and too expensive.
Uh huh.
And so they do use GPS to some degree, but they also use just like.
Well, I was just thinking the dog application would be useless to use Bluetooth.
Correct. Well, and
but GPS again, would make a bit more sense.
Correct. But basically, the way these networks work now, whether it's Apple's or Tile's, one, it depends upon you having a proliferation of other devices. So in Tile's case, you got to be in an area where a lot of people are using Tile for you to get long range, or longer range capabilities. With Apple, you can't throw a stick and not find an iPhone somewhere.
Well, right. And if I'm Tile, I don't care how expensive it is.
But they use triangulation, too, to get a more exact, radio triangulation.
Right.
And again, that all depends upon proliferation of the technology.
Which if I'm Tile, I'm not going to...
And so I think they realize that, they've gotten outdone, because... If I were Tile, I would go, hey, Apple, would you like to buy us at a bargain price?
I mean, really, that's... If they couldn't do it with GPS because it's cost prohibitive,
yeah. Well, and there's,
then well, you got to realize.
These AirTags are $29 a piece from Apple. You can buy four for $99, which makes them $25 a piece. The Tile, now, Tile has stickers. And see, also... I believe they use some near-field communication, like RFID, something like that, and some of the Tile products. I don't know if they use any RFID. I don't think they use RFID in the AirTags. But, they have stickers you can stick on things, and I think those are RFID-enabled. So it requires something that can do near-field communication, which most modern smartphones can do. But... that doesn't include an iPad or a laptop going and finding it, which Apple's solution allows you to do that. but they have the one thing Tile has, Apple has a device, and then you have various holders to be able to put them on, like keychains and holders that have straps, so you can strap it again on your laptop bag or whatever. Tile has like a card that can go in your wallet. They have stickers. They have the tiles that you can hang on your keychain. I mean, they've been around longer, and they've realized that customers wanted this diversification. I don't know. In the near future, I don't think we'll see that diversification in Apple product. It'll be, well, you either stick it in the pocket of your bag, or, you know, you put it in a holder and that type of thing. And Tile has some pretty thin options. Like I said, they have the card that can go in your wallet. But again, if you're in an area where not very many people use Tile, and I don't know of an area where there's lots of Tile usage. Maybe in big cities?
Maybe.
Maybe. But that's a statistic.
Again, that's just bad business planning.
Well, most people who use Tile, and what Tile was selling itself for, at least when I was interested in buying tiles, was you lay your keys down in your house, or you can't find your cell phone before Apple, you know, made it where you could log into your computer and ping your phone and it will make a noise.
Yeah.
Or you click a button on your Apple Watch and it finds your phone and makes it play a noise. You know, hence the one I use the most. You know, it was, I've lost my keys. Where did I lay them down? And so you open the Tile app on your smartphone and, you know, it, because of Bluetooth and...
Yeah, but I do remember seeing some advertisements with the dog.
Yes.
Specifically. That application is,
well, that was,
something that...
Again, that was one of those things that they advertised. And, like, our friends use it. But I asked him, I said, how well does it work? And he goes, well, you have to be within so many feet of him, you know. And again, he's a big husky who likes to dig in the dirt. So sometimes you won't find him, you know, under the bushes and stuff. And you'll be 50 feet from him, you know, and you can find him that way. But it's not like it's a good solution. I mean, there are GPS solutions you can get for your dogs where you can track them via GPS.
So one of the main reasons...
But those are expensive. They're a couple $100 as opposed to $25 or $29 for a Tile.
One of the main reasons why my Chihuahuas are indoor dogs is because I spent 2 hours chasing Daisy around Huber Heights, and I said never again. If I had a solution like that,
yeah,
I would be a little less crazy.
Yeah. So to continue on with the Apple theme, so Apple also at the event released the new M1 iMac, which they are beautiful machines. But I live in the portable world and I have the same processor and cooling capabilities, so it's not like I want to add an M1 iMac. If somebody gave me one, I'd proudly display it and I'd turn it on and I might use it sometimes. But it would be more of a trophy than it would be a... something that I would practically use. But that means, so that's the fourth, you know, Apple has your pro products and they have your pro consumer prosumer products. So they've done the Mac Mini, the MacBook Air, and the iMac from the consumer prosumer level. The only pro machine they have is the 13-inch MacBook Pro, which shares the same processor as those other three. So now they've got to do the heavier hitters, the full-size MacBook Pros and the Mac Pro. And so evidently Apple's M2 chip has entered production, and they may ship as soon as July. They expect Apple's going to announce those, the changes and the products that are available in the with the M2. They're calling it M2. I have a feeling Apple will call it like the M1X, kind of like the 814X, or, you know. And the reason is because M2 will be an even bigger step between, that'll differentiate an M1 from an M2. But their Worldwide Developers Conference is in June, so they expect that they'll make the announcement, because Apple had made their statement at their last Worldwide Developers Conference when they said they were going to Apple's socks, that it would be a 12-month transition. And so those are pretty much the last two things, you know, running on Intel processors right now. And it would make sense that they would, you know, move to that at that time. Especially since within Apple, unless it is, if you're an Apple customer, unless you absolutely have to have something like a MacBook Pro with a big screen or a Mac Pro for some, you know, because you're doing a big media editing workflow or things like that, Apple is not selling Intel-based Macs. The majority of what they're selling right now are their own M1 sock-based Macs.
And why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they? And also, why wouldn't people use them? They're so much more powerful than the same machines, you know, from the previous generation that had Intel processors. Why would you invest in, unless you absolutely had to, why would you invest in an Intel machine?
And you don't have to.
Yeah, and you don't have to. And that's kind of one of the things that's been interesting. The other thing Apple has done is, so yesterday they released Big Sur 10.3, macOS 11.3 is Big Sur 11.3. Sorry, my brain still says 10. They also released iOS 14.5, which had the controversial disables tracking, and you have to opt in. And, you know, when I opened Facebook after installing it, it still worked. And you know, it's kind of funny. There's an article from, who did this article? Oh, Inc. And they found that only the opt-in rate is only about 26% for personalized ads. So 74% of people opt out of allowing Facebook and other apps to track their activity. And that was before Apple put this in. So it's not like it's changed anything. As a matter of fact, I hate the fact, it's annoying to me when I go and I search for something on Amazon, and then all of a sudden I get Amazon recommendation emails, which I can't turn off because that's just part of Amazon, for things that I was just looking at, you know? Or things I was doing research for, and I had no intention of buying, you know, but I might have had a customer who needed something weird, or I saw some product and I wanted to see if it was available on Amazon. Yeah,
I bought the thing, and I'm getting,
yeah, you're getting emails for the thing you bought already,
and Facebook ads and
exactly
everything else.
So that's, and then the other thing, which there was, I watched a YouTube video on this, but I agree with the guy. He was talking about Microsoft has lost its ability to maintain Windows 10. And I agree with what he said, because the last two monthly updates have either caused a boot loop because the update has to uninstall itself because it can't successfully update, or it's causing, if it does update, it's causing blue screens of death for lots of users. And again, this goes to my Intel statement as before, when you're the big dog for so long and everybody's gunning for you.
Well, there's reasons why Bill Gates is now talking about vaccines.
Yeah, exactly.
And it ain't because he's perfected Windows.
Nope. And, you know, so the recommendation right now is do not update to the current Windows monthly patch.
Before you leave today, we need to make sure that I've turned off automatic updates.
Yeah, I don't typically have it installed on my Windows machines, but I'm faithful at keeping updates going because, I mean, even Apple, nobody's perfect. Linux, macOS, Windows, everybody's got vulnerabilities. Our Windows vulnerabilities tend to be worse than others because there's a lot. Windows is the worst about disclosing things and getting them fixed in a timely manner where it actually works. But you have to keep up with it, you know. I know so many people who don't, and then you get, and Windows is the worst kind because they get so behind on Windows 10 updates that they won't install because they've taken away some middle update and they're assuming everybody had got to a certain point.
To me, the aggravating thing about automatic updates is I leave my machine on all the time. In the middle of the night, they'll run an update, and then I'll be running in here in the morning 2 minutes before my conference call starts on Zoom, and I gotta log in and go through all the boot up crap. And there was no warning.
Absolutely. I mean, that's annoying.
Even if they would just, you know, log me back in after an update, that would be less aggravating.
Yeah.
To me. And to me, that's the very definition of an automatic update.
My favorite is...
just update it and make it so that, like, it's so far behind the scenes, I'm not even aware that you updated me.
Yeah. Well, my favorite is... I'll have a whole bunch of documents open, even on my Windows machines, and I won't have saved something, and so the update goes to reboot, and it can't reboot, and it hangs. Because, do you want to save the changes you made to this document? Well, after a while, like 8 hours of sleep, Windows does all kinds of things to try to close that document up, and then it freezes itself. And I'm talking about machines that are pretty pure, that, you know... They run four pieces of software besides Windows. So, well, I think that about wraps up what's gone on between last week and this week. So, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Please send us feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.